Hello and welcome back to another episode of the All For One podcast during Diabetes Awareness Month. So today, if you want to be the change that you want to see them in the world and spread some diabetes awareness, then share this podcast with a friend or a family member that you think would benefit from it. As always, I am joined today by an incredible panel of people with type 1 diabetes. We've got Sally, who's joining us for the first time. I mean, I say the first time. We actually tried to record this podcast yesterday, but we won't talk too much about that. But she's here for real. The show is on today. Sally, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you. Welcome back. Thank you for having me.
So, Sally, you were chatting to me yesterday about your journey with type 1 diabetes. It's quite interesting. And recently, you've really decided to connect with people with the condition and really sort of take ownership of it, haven't you?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's kind of, as I mentioned before, yesterday, I was diagnosed 17 years ago, since I was diagnosed at the age of 10. And my diagnosis story is quite a weird one. It's not as dramatic as it might be for some people. But so from the first day that I developed the symptoms, it was noticeable, but nobody knew what the cause of it was, what the reasoning behind it was. But then about a month after, my dad came and he said to me, "We're going to the hospital, we're not going to school." And so we went to the hospital, and I was there for the whole day. And I remember, because I got such a lot of attention from the staff, I actually enjoyed being at the hospital. I actually didn't want to go home, because I loved the attention that I was getting. And, you know, being 10 years old is kind of what you want anyway. And because nobody told me really what the issue was. And I went home on the same day. I didn't actually stay in the hospital. But even then, nobody really said what the issue was. All I knew was that I had to take injections and do blood sugar testing and wasn't allowed any sugar. And when I asked how long I had to do it for, my dad would always say something like, "Oh, just until next week." And then, you know, he never actually said this is going to be for life, sort of thing.
So it was quite a long journey for you to really understand what the condition is and what it means to your life. But now, in the space that you're in, you are connecting with people. You were telling me how you recently discovered the podcast. And actually, Sally, you only recently got in touch with me, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. So I came across this podcast just 2 weeks ago, and I was listening to some of the stories, and I thought, you know, I quite liked some of what I was listening to, and I thought maybe I've got something to contribute as well. Initially, I find reaching out to people extremely difficult, because it's, as I mentioned in our chat yesterday, I was only 3 years ago diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome, and so it kind of helped me understand the social difficulties that I tend to have, like making friends and reaching out to people. I've actually found that I'm much better at interacting with strangers than interacting with people who I might have already formed some sort of relationship with. But, you know, it's kind of something that I'd really like to change in a way. And I thought reaching out is one way to start.
It absolutely is. And we are a big supportive family here at the All For One podcast. There's loads of us that come onto this show and talk about all our frustrations and our issues and let some steam off. So you are very welcome along to the show. And like Sally said, she just got in touch a couple of weeks ago. So if you fancy hearing yourself on this very podcast, then all you have to do is get in touch with me. You can email contactallforone@gmail.com, or you can get in touch with us on social media. We are on all of them. Just search for us, you'll be able to find us. Or you can get in touch with me, Jamie Lowe, directly. I am Jamie Lowe TV on all of the social medias. Now, I really like it when listeners get in touch and say that they're listening and the things that they like, the things that they don't like. And I received a nice message from Beth Gilbert who said, "Hey, just wanted to say that I'm loving the podcast. I've been diabetic for 15 years and haven't connected with another diabetic in the whole of that time. So when I discovered the podcast a few weeks ago, it was a little bit of a lift. Keep up the good work." Thanks so much for that message, Beth. And if you would like to get in touch with the show, I've already mentioned how to do that. Please also, if you have got a little bit of spare time, leave us a 5-star review. It just helps get the word out there and helps connect this podcast with more people like Sally, who found us a couple of weeks ago and is now on the panel. Also joining us on the panel today are two returning members. We've got Dan and Noni. How are we doing, folks?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very, very good. And Noni?
Yes, good, thank you, good. My connection seems to be good at the moment, so fingers crossed.
Good stuff. Well, let's not waste any more time. Let's get straight into the podcast. This podcast is obviously during Diabetes Awareness Month. World Diabetes Day is just around the corner, so we're going to be chatting about that very, very soon. Also today, we're going to be talking about what you would do if you didn't have type 1 diabetes for a day. I've been asking people on social media, and I think you'll probably guess most of the responses. We're also going to be meeting Jess Fellows, who wants to be the first person to cycle the globe with type 1 diabetes. And we're also going to be poking our heads inside Southmead Hospital, which is my local hospital here in Bristol, to see what they're doing to help find a cure for type 1 diabetes. But the first discussion topic of today's podcast is those comments from Paul Hollywood on the Great British Bake Off. Did anyone manage to see the episode when it went out?
Not at all.
No.
No, I didn't see. I just saw the aftermath on social media.
The hullabaloo.
Yeah. Aftermath is correct. So why don't you take us there, Dan? What was the thing that, what started to happen after Paul Hollywood made those comments?
So I think I went onto Twitter and saw Paul Hollywood was trending. Didn't think much of it. Then on my timeline, I saw diabetes on the plate and the uproar that his comments has caused, and lots of people with type 1 saying that, quite rightly, that it was a very much an ignorant comment to make, and then talking about the differences between type 1 and type 2. But then I think we also need to remember there are many other types of diabetes as well.
Absolutely. And I think that seems to be a real stickler at the minute, with people with type 1 diabetes being, I guess we feel tarred with the type 2 diabetes brush, because type 2 diabetes gets a really bad rap in the press. I saw a headline recently about a deluge AE waiting room full of people with diabetes, which obviously wasn't us. I mean, there probably were a few people with type 1 diabetes in that AE waiting room, but I don't think the article was about us. But I think it points to a touchy nerve that people with type 1 diabetes have about being misunderstood, about people thinking that we do have type 2 diabetes instead of type 1 diabetes. Yeah. But just a quick look on social media, and what people were doing were actually showing what their diabetes on a plate looked like. So I'm staring at a picture here now with some insulin pens, some cartridges, some needle tips and test strips, and a blood tester machine. So it seems like everybody, well, not everybody, because I didn't tweet it, but lots of people acted really fast and were like, "No, Paul, here's what it really looks like." Do you reckon that it came from, though? Do you reckon that it came from a place of offence? Do you think people, on the whole, were offended by Paul Hollywood's comments?
I wasn't, and it's tricky, isn't it? Because everybody talks about the snowflake generation, and I certainly don't want to be a snowflake, and I wouldn't describe myself as a snowflake in any way, shape or form. However, it was just a generally ignorant comment, and when you're trying to educate about diabetes, you don't need that sort of backward comment, really, from a supposedly intelligent man. And he's a baker, so he will know about diabetes and insulin and also carb counting and stuff like that even. So he could have done a lot more. He could have made a joke about, oh, I wonder how many carbs are in that Chelsea bun. You know, that would have been a good joke to make, but yeah.
Well, I'm actually staring at one of his Instagram posts right now, and it said, a sweet treat, Chelsea Bruns, a remark re-diabetes I made on tonight's show was thoughtless. I meant no harm, as both my granddad and my own mother suffered from diabetes. Obviously, he's saying, oh, I mean, I'm sorry I made the joke, but it's okay because I know people with diabetes.
I do wonder if he did it for the headline, because as he does know people with diabetes, he could have honestly have said, oh, I wonder how many carbs are in that Chelsea bun. And that would have, I don't know.
Well,
it just seems very ignorant.
In the Instagram post, he's just saying diabetes again. He's not specifying a type. So that leads me to believe that he doesn't really understand that, like Dan said, there are many types of type 1 diabetes. And I think it's just coming from a place of ignorance. And I'm not really offended by those comments, because I think, you know, I guess even before I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, I was probably making the, oh my God, I'm going to have so much diabetes after I've eaten all this ice cream. You know, because it's just a joke that people make. It's part of the zeitgeist. It's part of something that's like big, you know, it's part of like the colloquial jokes that we all draw upon in, you know, general conversation.
Yeah.
And also, I think you'll find that there are some shows that even make similar jokes to that. I mean, there's The Simpsons, for example. There was Family Guy, which you mentioned before as well. So, you know, these
I've seen
jokes,
quite a lot of them recently. Yeah.
Yeah. So these sort of jokes have been made before. And I think even a few years back, Jamie Oliver, he was standing behind a Coke bottle that said on it, diabetes.
There's the fine line, because I reckon that Jamie Oliver was trying to make a point that drinking sugary pop can increase your risk of diabetes, which type of diabetes, type 2 diabetes, but diabetes nonetheless. But I think it's real, because I know as working in the news media, having to say type 2 diabetes and type 1 diabetes and having to write that, it eats up a lot of your time, or it eats up a lot of your word count, and it eats up a lot of your time in, say, a voiceover. So I understand that for someone who's writing a piece of copy, who is producing a segment for TV, it is easier to just say diabetes. So are we asking too much to ask people to say, I mean, I always make an effort too, but are we asking too much to specify, to make people specify every time they mention diabetes, which diabetes they're talking about?
It's tricky as well with type 2 diabetes as well. Should people really get as much stick as they do for having type 2 diabetes? Because some older people, you can get nice slim elder people with type 2 diabetes who, and is it always caused by diet? It could just be your pancreas is tired and it's wearing down and stopping producing as much insulin. You may not necessarily have eaten a really bad diet all your life, so I do think it's a bit unfair.
It's also genetics. So they say type 2 is more likely in people of certain ethnic backgrounds, so i.e. Middle Eastern, African, Caribbean, South Asian. So sometimes, I mean, even young children now are getting type 2 diabetes, whether they're overweight or not. So
yeah. Well, I guess yeah. what what it did do, what these comments did do is, and I like to try and find the positives in everything, it did flood social media with lots of people talking about type 1 diabetes, and it did flood, yeah, absolutely. Sure. It did flood social media with pictures of the insulin that we use every day and the testing strip. So maybe in some weird way, Paul Hollywood did us a favour and helped to get the word out a little bit more. But someone who is getting the word out about type 1 diabetes this month is Dan, who's on the podcast right now. So Dan, what are you doing during Diabetes Awareness Month? You're quite active on social media, aren't you?
Yes. So there are a couple of challenges on Instagram. So one is basically the challenge is to post something about diabetes every day in November because it's Diabetes Awareness Month. So one of the challenges that I'm doing is the Happy Diabetic Challenge. I think that's okay. The profile is the insulin type. I think that's her page. So basically each day you post whatever is the topic for that day. So I think so the first day was introduce yourself. Yesterday was diabetes and mental health. The day before that was your weirdest comment you've heard about diabetes. And before that was diabetes and work. So it's just it's a nice challenge to share your own personal experience and raise your awareness during the month. I did it last year, but I skipped quite a few days, and this year I've made sure that I've tried to make a conscious effort to post most days.
Yeah.
I think I've missed only one or two days.
Well, it is. I mean, I always have so many, you know, ideas and intentions when November comes around. So I was like, oh, I'm going to make this video and that video, and I'm going to, you know, retrace my steps and go back to 2015 and, you know, tell my diagnosis story and all that sort of stuff. And oh my God, I just haven't had time. And I just wonder when I'll ever manage to fulfill these ideas that I've got. But it is important to, you know, do something during this month, isn't it? So Noni, I know that your son's school is doing something cool.
Yes, I'm really, really pleased. They are doing the Type 1 Superhero Day. So all the children will bring in a donation to JDRF, and they can dress up as a superhero, which I'm sure all the younger children will do. I think the older children, a lot of them may just dress in non-school uniform and bring a contribution, but nevertheless, that is brilliant. And I'm really, really pleased they're doing it this year.
I would love to dress up as a superhero. I love dressing up as superheroes. If I was going to school, no matter what year I was in, I would be dressing up. I've got several superhero costumes, like adult size ones. Like, no joke.
There's always Comic Con.
Yeah.
that happens throughout the year.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe I'll get down to a Comic Con. Maybe I should take part in the superhero day. When is it? Is it this Friday?
That sounds brilliant.
It's World Diabetes Day.
On World Diabetes Day?
Yes, yeah, so Thursday.
So that's Thursday the 14th for people that are listening to this in the future. Thursday the 14th of November.
Yes. I'm also hoping, and they did last year in my hometown, Herne Bay, we lit up our clock tower blue, which was really lovely for World Diabetes Day, which
lovely
is a nice
stuff.
Tribute.
Well, as Noni alluded to there, JDRF's theme for World Diabetes Day is superheroes. We're going to talk a bit more about that later on. But I want to introduce you to someone who I met recently, who I think is a type 1 superhero, or is soon to be anyway. Her name is Jess Fellows, and she wants to be the first person with type 1 diabetes to cycle round the world. Here's what happened when I met her in a local park in Bristol. After travelling South America, Jess Fellows returned to the UK to discover that she has type 1 diabetes. And since then, she's been on a journey learning to live well with the condition.
For me, staying active really helps. So cycling everywhere as my mode of transport, but also for pleasure as well. Doing lots of yoga, meditation, breathing, just staying really in my body and, as much as I can. You have to check your blood a lot, which doesn't sound like much of a big deal, but it does wear you down because you're pricking your fingers all the time. So I've just got loads of holes in my fingers, and it doesn't hurt loads, but it's also not pain-free. And it's always at the back of your mind. So even though your diabetic kit can be, you know, not on your person, it's still in your mind all the time. I'm always thinking about when my next meal will be, and I panic if I don't know when that's coming. It's quite high pressured. I mean, I've definitely found that my mental health has suffered somewhat. Like, I definitely have more anxiety nowadays and occasionally panic attacks, which aren't fun. But I mean, there's so much support out there. The NHS on the whole have been amazing. There's also a really big online community, so I don't feel isolated with it, and I have a lot of support from my friends and family who understand the condition really well.
And despite her condition, Jess is planning to take on a challenge of epic proportions.
So we've done a few cycling tours already, me and my boyfriend, and we've always thought in our dreams we'll love to do a round the world tour one day. And it's not that uncommon now. There are a lot of people that cycle around the world, but I think I'd be the first diabetic to do it. So that is quite a big undertaking.
Because of her type 1 diabetes, Jess's body doesn't produce insulin, a hormone which stores energy from food. Without this vital medicine, Jess would die. But price, availability and access of insulin can vary from country to country.
That's what I'm really interested about, and meeting different diabetics around the world and how they cope and deal with it. It's quite weird that there's not much information online in terms of buying insulin, whether you can buy it over the counter or get a prescription off the local doctor. Because when we did a cycle tour across Europe, one of my last vials smashed on the ground, and so panic set in, and I went to a local pharmacy and they said, oh, you need a local prescription from a local doctor. And I don't know why I didn't just go and source that, but instead I rang my mom in a panic and she just flew out with insulin. So bless her, my mom and dad came and had a little jolly, so that was nice for them. But obviously I can't rely on my mom and dad doing that when we're in the Gobi Desert. I really want to showcase what people can do with this condition, and I don't want it to feel like it's a limiting factor for anyone. Yes, you have to manage it carefully, and yes, you have to be more aware of what you're putting into your body and what you're putting out, but generally I just don't want people to feel like they are housebound or townbound. Like, you can literally keep traveling and keep having adventures even with this condition.
There we go, Jess Fellows there, who's planning to be the first person with type 1 diabetes to cycle around the world. I really hope she manages to fulfil her goal. How incredible would that be? She would definitely be a type 1 superhero. But I've been asking people on social media what they would do if they didn't have type 1 diabetes for a day. Now, before I get into some of the responses, let's take it to the panel and see what today's lovely panel would do if they didn't have type 1 diabetes for a day. Dan, start us off. What would you get done in that day without diabetes?
I think it would be eating what I want, drinking what I want, and sleeping as well, with no thought of am I about any sort of blood sugar, and just having a good sleep. So yeah, sleep for 12 hours and eat and drink for the other 12 hours for whatever.
How about you, Sally?
To be honest, it's quite hard to say, because I've come to think of diabetes as type 1 diabetes as being like my best friend. So in a way, I can't imagine not having it. I mean, because like it's kind of given me strength in ways that if I wasn't a diabetic, you know, I probably wouldn't have the same strength. But I think to put it into perspective, if I could have a day without type 1, I would just go hiking for as long as I'd like without having to worry about, you know, am I dropping? Do I need to eat something? Or, you know, how much insulin do I need to give, and just being basically wandering around in the middle of nowhere without having to think about my own safety.
I completely get what you're saying there, and I agree with you. Type 1 diabetes has brought a lot of positivity to my life in terms of strength and mental stability and just all around confidence and all that sort of thing. But yeah, I often wonder sometimes, what would my brain be able to do if it didn't have to worry about type 1 diabetes all the time? What would my brain be able to accomplish if I didn't have to, you know, think about my blood sugar or what I need to eat or if I need to carb count and that sort of thing? Maybe I'm just like, I could have been a genius, but I'm not because of type 1 diabetes. My brain space has taken up. Anyway, Noni, what would you do in your day without diabetes?
What would I do? Now, that is actually a really complicated question because obviously my son's got it as well.
So he gets a day off too.
He gets a day off too. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. What are we going to do with ourselves? In that case, we would have to go somewhere and eat at a very peculiar time, because now we've got no set schedule. It doesn't have to be so routine. So we'd certainly eat at an odd time and eat what we wanted. And then we wouldn't have to eat again for hours and hours without feeling like we were going to pass out.
Yes.
That would be great.
Yeah, I mean, the comments that I got on social media, were quite a lot about food. The food is a very common topic, but I'm just going to read some out. So Emily Finnemore said, if I wasn't T1 for a day, I'd probably enjoy leaving the house without loads of supplies. I've tried to leave without as many at the minute. I'm trying to not have so many because I keep losing them, so I basically just can't afford to take them out of the house too often. So I'm trying to do it on as light a load as possible, and I seem to be getting there. Steve O. Moff said, a day of cake and chocolate for sure, then a huge pizza and all the pasta, basically everything. Vic's T1 Fit said, definitely going for a run with just my headphones and not the pump, PDM, jelly babies, blood tester, etc., etc. But without T1D, I wouldn't be so determined to do the things I do. I'll read just one more comment. Kat McChapman said, poutine. I eat poutine, but if I wasn't type 1 diabetic, I'd eat an uncomfortable amount of it in a short amount of time. All the carbs and all of the gravy. Fantastic. So I think a lot of people would be very fat if we didn't have type 1 diabetes. If we all had a day off, we'd all eat too much. And, you know, that's no good for anyone. But, I mean, it is important to eat the foods that make you feel good sometimes. I mean, right now I'm doing an 8-week fitness challenge, so I'm trying, like, my hardest to not eat anything bad. I mean, it's happened a few times because I had my birthday recently, so there's been like so many, like, oh god, people know I'm type 1 diabetic, but I had three different birthday cakes. People bought me three different birthday cakes and I couldn't give them away.
I kept that before. Actually, I complained once a year that I didn't get a birthday cake and I got four.
Kept coming home and seeing these cakes in the kitchen and kept, oh, I'll just have a couple of forkfuls. But I mean, like, by the time I'd finished, I pretty much had a slice or two. So it was doing really bad things. And I hate throwing food away, but those cakes did go in the bin, unfortunately. But if you did want to get involved in the conversation, you can still do so. We are all across social media, so please do let us know what you would do if you didn't have type 1 diabetes day. You can find us on Instagram. We are at All For One Insta. You can find us on Twitter. We are at All For One Tweets. You can find us on Facebook. We are at All For One Online. Or for anything else, you can just get in touch on our email, which is contact allforone@gmail.com. Now, in a bit, we're going to be hearing a bit more from Jess Fellows about how she's going to manage to get her insulin in the Gobi Desert. And we're also going to be poking our heads round a laboratory at Southmead Hospital where they're actually trying to find a cure for type 1 diabetes. But right now, we're going to get the latest news update from Emily Horn.
A A new app is being developed which aims to improve the user experience of a closed-loop artificial pancreas for people of different ages and capabilities. The project is funded by JDRF and is developing designs and interfaces to make closed-loop systems easier to understand and use. In addition, the team is developing algorithms to help mimic the way a healthy biologic pancreas works. The first stage of development will see the team investigate the visual setup, how to alert the user, and the overall user experience. A cyclist with type 1 diabetes has spoken out about winning an epic ultra-endurance 25-hour bike race in one day. George Kirkpatrick, who uses a flash glucose monitor, claimed victory in the solo category in the Red Bull time-lapse race, which took place in Great Windsor Park. Now in its third year, 1,000 cyclists came together in October to pack in 25 hours of riding into a day. This is possible once a year when an extra hour is gained from the transition from British summertime to Greenwich Mean Time. George said he made the decision not to sleep at all during the race, but he did stop every hour for a couple of minutes. Insulin-producing beta cells, which can be switched on and off by blue light, have been transplanted into mice with diabetes, researchers report. A team from Tufts University in Massachusetts say the newly engineered cells increased insulin levels by up to 3 times the amount in the presence of higher glucose levels, but not when glucose levels were low. The researchers report that the transplanted cells also led to improved glucose tolerance. The researchers tested the transplanted cells in mice that had been treated with streptozotocin, a chemical that destroys beta cells. The cells were transplanted under the skin of the mice, which allowed for the blue light to better reach the cells. Well, that's the latest news in the Type 1 world. Now back to the All for One podcast.
Thank you very much, Emily, for that update on the latest news in the Type 1 world. But let's return to what JDRF are doing for Diabetes Awareness Month and, of course, World Diabetes Day. So we celebrate World Diabetes Day on the 14th, if you didn't know, because that was Frederick Banton's birthday. Now, I think I'm right in saying that he's the guy. Well, no, I know I'm right in saying that he's the guy that we have to thank for our insulin. Dan, what do you understand about what JDRF are doing this year? It's something that they do every year, the superhero thing, isn't it?
Yeah, so for the past... So for last year and this year for World Diabetes Day, we are encouraging supporters and anyone who wants to dress up as superheroes for World Diabetes Day. So your school can get involved, workplaces, family, friends, your diabetes team, and our theme for World Diabetes Day is family and diabetes.
Great. So we are encouraging everyone to dress up as a superhero.
Yeah,
like I mentioned, I've already got superhero costumes. I need to get them to where I live in Bristol. They're at my parents' house in Stoke-on-Trent. I've got a Batman costume and the... If you're an OG Power Rangers fan, you'll know who the White Ranger is. And I've got a White Ranger costume too.
I know who the White Ranger is.
Yeah.
Sick. I know.
He went into the Green Ranger as well, didn't he?
Did he?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I used to absolutely love Power Rangers.
I know too much.
So, yeah, I have a choice of what costume I can wear for World Diabetes
that is
Day.
Fab.
I feel like, though...
I will be looking. I haven't got one yet, but I will be looking now.
Good. Okay, so what... You don't have to be a comic book superhero, do you? You could just, you know, find a cape and a mask and things like that. I guess it's quite easy to make a superhero costume for quite cheap now.
Sure.
And also, yeah. I mean, it's all about not buying fast fashion and sustainably making all of these costumes. I recently went to... Boomtown Festival have opened a venue space in Bristol and they invited me along, and a costume was essential. You weren't allowed in if you didn't have a costume, and they also really wanted you to make a costume out of things that you already had, and so you didn't end up buying a load of like single-use plastics and all that sort of stuff. And it was quite easy to do, so if you are a bit of a loss for your superhero costume, just, I don't know, whack an old bed sheet around your neck, and then there you go, you've got a cape. But of course, there are lots of resources available on the JDRF website, which is jdrf.org.uk. Just go to the Be a Type 1 Superhero This World Diabetes Day page. All the information's there, and a little convenient spot for you to donate. You can either make that a monthly donation of 5, 12, 45 or other. Please choose other and put £1 million, or a single donation. But all jokes aside, donate what you can, because that money that goes to charities like JDRF goes into research, which will hopefully find us a cure. And because type 1 diabetes is such a WTF condition, it's so crazy. No one knows where it came from. No one knows what's happening. The instances of diagnosis are rising, and everyone's a bit like, "Huh?" The research that they're doing is mind-blowing. The minutiae that they look at and the different avenues they're exploring to try and glean a little bit of information which will help us one day find a cure is just astounding. We'll hear a bit more about that later. Guys, I wanted to ask you, what does World Diabetes Day and Diabetes Awareness Month on the whole mean to you?
I think it's about celebrating how far we've come in the diabetes world. I mean, insulin was first used in 1922, and if it wasn't for Frederick Banting, many of us wouldn't be here today. So it's about celebrating all the milestones and the development of medication, new ways of treating diabetes. And it's also possibly remembering those who maybe didn't have the same access to the advancements in medicines that we have today.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and spreading awareness about it as well, and about spreading awareness about the daily struggles of living with type 1, the highs and lows, etc., which is all very important. And well said, Sally, that was brilliant. Yeah,
thank you.
And I agree. I think this month I've probably been a bit more aware, or more of a conscious effort of, yes, I have type 1 diabetes and live with type 1, but actually being aware of the other types of diabetes as well, because it is Diabetes Awareness Month. And then when it comes to World Diabetes Day, it's as everyone's said before, it's just appreciating the fact that I am alive, I am able to live, I'm fortunate to be living in a country where I do have access to insulin.
Absolutely.
And yeah. I think that's a key thing as well.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone's aware, but in Toronto, I think it was started in 1989, there was a new area created, and it's called the Flame of Hope. And the whole point of it is to keep the flame lighting so that until there's a cure for diabetes, and also to remember those who have passed from it. If you go onto Google and just type the Flame of Hope, you'll find it there. But it's just really awe-inspiring. It's so awe-inspiring.
I will do. That's a lovely thing. That's a really good thing. Yeah.
I've really wanted to visit Canada, and that's just made me want to visit Canada more. So I think places, I don't know. So I'm about to say something that might be taken a bit the wrong way. I feel like places like Canada and the States maybe do like diabetes and type 1 diabetes awareness a little bit better than we do just yet, because they've got the Flame of Hope, and they have all these incredible meetups, which are, I am starting to see a bit more in the UK. So Diabetes UK do the big one for people who are transitioning from young person services from child services to young person services in the NHS. And there's a lot of like conferences and summits and things like that. But I feel like it's a bit of sitting in a hotel conference suite and listening to talks and things like that, which is all well and good, But I think that really only caters for the people who are so like really interested in the science and the potential applications of new science and where the new research is and all that sort of stuff, which is absolutely fine. I think we could be doing a bit more to inspire a bit of activity in, you know, the people that are just, you know, getting by with type 1 diabetes, the people that are just, you know, putting in their hours at work, looking after their family, trying to do a bit of exercise and have a good time too. What do you guys think about that? Or am I just seeing, am I just being duped by social media here? Because I just see loads of cool pictures from people in the States and the rest of North America.
I feel exactly the same as you. I feel like in the UK we're much further behind in terms of use of technology and medicine, and also getting just generally getting patients involved in events and you know, asking for our opinion on new developments. So I think healthcare professionals, they could do a bit more to get people with diabetes involved in all the decision making and keep up to date with what's happening in the world of diabetes.
Because I mean, there are loads of things like Chris Bright, who's been on this podcast, who has his futsal team. There's loads of things like that, and the diathlete. But I don't know, these people are doing great things, but I feel like in the States, that I mean, maybe everything's bigger in America, maybe, yeah. That's what it is, but yeah. It just feels like there's a lot more buzz. So I wonder if we should try and create a bit more of a not such a sciencey feel when we're celebrating people with type 1 diabetes. So stuff like JDRF are doing, like celebrate your superhero, and you know, do an event where it's not necessarily about type 1 diabetes. It is at its core. But, you know, we're not talking about insulin. We're not talking about carb counting. We're not talking about, you know, flash glucose readers and that sort of thing. We're just, you know, being here, doing something fun and positive, and it's benefiting the research of a type 1 diabetes cure. Does that make sense to anyone?
Yeah. Do you mean it's more like a... Because I know what you mean about when you look at the States and you see the pictures on Instagram and they have all their meetups and they just... It looks fun, so it's more like a casual. There are 10 people who go and I don't know, have a meal or drinks or whatever, and they all happen to have type 1, and it's more of a meetup, casual sort of vibe. Is that what you mean?
I mean, I think I've seen like parties thrown, and you know, like it's like. So over here, I think we've recently had a tech summit in Birmingham, which obviously benefited a load of people, and it was a really positive resource for many people. But I don't know if I would have got the same thing out of it, because, you know, although I like to hear people talk about their experiences with type 1 diabetes and what's next, I find it a bit, you know, stuffy and a bit, you know, difficult to sit in a room and listen to keynote speeches and lectures constantly throughout a day. So I reckon if we, I don't know, maybe, oh God, I don't have time to be putting on these events, but maybe if I could be the change in the world that I wanted to see, I would say, hey guys, we're all going to celebrate being a type 1 diabetes superhero today. We're going to go and do an inflatable obstacle course. There's going to be, you know, a colour run and blah, 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 and all this sort of fun stuff that's maybe not necessarily focused on the science and the detail and the talks and the speeches and all that sort of stuff.
I've been to a few JDRF Discovery Days, and what I've noticed is that they talk a lot about the research that's being done and the new things that have been discovered. But what I find a bit frustrating is that there's always these talks about what's happening and the stuff they've come up with, but there doesn't really seem to be much going on in terms of action. It just seems to be more like words. I've noticed that with in the pediatric clinics, they actually do fun days for the children who have diabetes, but with the adults, there's definitely no such thing. And I think, you know, it would be nice to have something like that where, you know, people just get together and they, you know,
and meet up sometimes. I absolutely agree.
And just celebrate, you know, each other's achievements and, you know, bond over being a diabetic rather than just being bombarded with the scientific information that may never come into fruition.
Well, maybe that's what the All For One brand will evolve into somewhere along the line. Maybe if we get big enough, we will throw a huge party with an inflatable obstacle course and a colour run and paintball guns and anything that we can get our hands on and celebrate us living with type 1 diabetes. But let's go back to that park in Bristol and hear a bit more from Jess Fellows on how she's going to manage to survive in that desert.
Well, I always like it when the podcast gets outside. We're standing in Grevelsmith Park, which is in South Bristol. I can see the Clifton Suspension Bridge in the distance there. We've got Ashton Gate to my left of me, and then to my right is Jess Fellows, who's going to be going around the world on a bike with type 1 diabetes. So Jess, obviously getting hold of insulin is going to be quite difficult for you out there. We already heard a little earlier on a bit of your plan, but obviously that's going to be quite a cause for anxiety when you're out there, isn't it?
Yeah, well, hopefully we're going to try and limit how much anxiety it brings, but so at the moment I've been in touch with Novo Nordisk, who are the pharmaceutical manufacturers, and they've been really helpful and encouraging about the trip. So I'm still in conversation with them about places where I might be able to pick it up through their means, but other ways I've been figuring out is just by keeping my NHS supply in the UK, and obviously friends and family want to come and visit us in different spots, so they're going to bring it out for us. And then in the meantime, when we're on the road, we're going to make use of Frio, which are amazing pouches which keep insulin cool.
So Team Nordisk, is it Team Novo Nordisk? Yeah. They've got their own cycling team, Novo Nordisk,
exactly,
haven't they? So I guess they're quite a useful contact for you for doing a journey like this.
Absolutely, yeah, that's why I thought. They've already got an affiliation with cycling, and all their riders are type 1. So yeah, I thought it'd be a great little match and a story for them in themselves as well.
So you mentioned then keeping your NHS insulin supply here, obviously with it being the NHS. Obviously, that's going to put some things into perspective for you, isn't it? Because you still have access to this incredible supply of life-saving insulin. So when you're going and visiting these other countries and you're seeing how differently insulin is accessed across the world, what's that going to be like?
I don't know yet, but I'm very intrigued and curious about how other people deal with it, because I know in certain rural areas, when there isn't a supply for, you know, for youngsters especially, it's life-threatening and quite often doesn't end well. So I think that's the charity I want to raise money for, because I believe that insulin should be available to everyone who needs it.
And it's going to be a long trip, and you're going to obviously be having all these incredible experiences and, you know, eye-opening experiences. How are you going to be documenting your journey when you're out there?
We're going to be making videos for sure. We're researching the best camera for that right now. So definitely going to have a website, a blog, and use Instagram for stories, and also, yeah, YouTube videos.
Well, Jess, I'm looking forward to seeing you out there. Maybe it'll inspire more people to do incredible stuff like this. So when are you planning to set off on this journey?
The beginning of May next year, 2020.
Are you looking forward to it?
I can't wait. As much as I love my life in Bristol, I can't wait to get out there and see the rest of the world.
Jess Fellows there, definitely someone with type 1 diabetes that you should all be paying attention to in the new year. But every month on the podcast, we like to feature someone who I think we should be watching. A type 1 to watch, that's what I call it. Someone doing an incredible thing in our community. And that someone this month is David Stevens, who's already been on the podcast before, but he's recently really stepped it up on being a friend to anyone who needs it online. And that's why he's this month's type 1 to watch.
So I'm David. I've had type 1 diabetes since May the 4th, 2010. Such a date to remember. I had a rough patch with diabetes, not gonna lie, and like I found social media and all that stuff, and now I'm in a better place. I'm on an insulin pump. So at first when I used social media, I was in a really bad place with my diabetes, so it was a negative experience at first for me. It was my own fault. I will openly admit that I wasn't like very engaging with people. I was more of a troll type person. but obviously then it just caused a bit of drama online. So I took a step back for a little bit. And then when I got my insulin pump, everything changed. I was engaging with my diabetes properly and making connections with the right people. And ever since then, being on social media has just been really, really good for my type 1 diabetes. If I'm feeling down or if I'm just feeling a bit lost, I can count. If I put a tweet up, someone will send me a message to see if I'm okay or something like that. So yeah, it's all good. So there's a tweet chat every Wednesday night that I use. If I go to events, talking about diabetes, TED Talk, or wherever a type 1 event is in Wales, I will. If people aren't there, I know that not everyone can get tickets or not everyone can go to these events because of the times and stuff like that. So I'll promote the event, I'll tweet what's going on in the event. I just help spread the events that are around the UK to people that aren't lucky enough to get tickets or just can't get there. I found that when I used social media and used it properly now, I found that no question is silly. So if you're newly diagnosed, you can ask anything and you will get a response from someone. If you're new to the doc community, people will introduce you saying that you are new and stuff like that, so people will reach out to you. And it's just nice in a way that people will reach out to you and give you the support that you need when you're first diagnosed.
So as always, there'll be a full-on in-depth chat with David Stevens on the show coming up very, very shortly in the next sort of week or so. That'll be available for you to listen to. It's really interesting, actually, to see how his experience with type 1 diabetes changed from something that was quite negative to something that now is, on the whole, very, very positive. But there is the hope in everyone's hearts that we won't have type 1 diabetes in the future. We are all hoping, I think, that one day in our lifetimes, we will be able to see a cure for the condition that we live with. I think most of us have adapted well and we sort of live well with the condition and we can even draw on some benefits. But one day, we all hope that there will be a cure. And a local laboratory to me here in Bristol is doing some very important research to find a cure. And with the help of Diabetes UK, I went to have a look around. In a high-tech lab next to Southmead Hospital, a team of scientists are hard at work searching for a cure for type 1 diabetes.
We run a research study that's been going for the last 30 years. We've enrolled people with type 1 and their family members. And so one of the main things that we do with them is we look at their blood samples and we look for these markers in their blood which predict whether they're going to develop type 1 or not.
The information from the study will help scientists to understand what causes the condition, which is key to finding a cure. But that eureka moment is still a long way off. So today, supporters of charity Diabetes UK are being given the chance to see where their fundraising is being spent.
Well, when you actually see the people, and you see the passion, and you see what they're, you know, the way they're invested in actually really making progress, it's quite inspiring.
And what do you do to fundraise?
I've done anything from running half marathons to selling cakes, all sorts of stuff. It's just, you know, anything you can, really. It is interesting to see the price tags on the stuff here and realise how expensive it is. And also, not only that, but to fund the people. You know, a lot of the people here can only do the work they're doing because they're being supported by a charity like DUK. So it's really makes it worthwhile.
Whilst on the tour, supporters of the charity are not only getting to grips with the techniques used by the scientists, but also the costs associated with this scale of research.
It's crucial that, first of all, we acknowledge the support that we've already been given and gifted by our supporters. And I think it's very important to engage with new supporters so that they can understand how important research is for finding a cure for this condition. And I think today the supporters that have actually gone on the tour have found out just how incredibly interesting and expensive that the whole process is.
So thank you to Diabetes UK for inviting me on that tour. I think a lot of the supporters got a lot out of that. And I think when that video hit the internet to start with, a lot of people were a bit angry that they didn't get invited on that tour as well. But I'm sure that Diabetes UK would have invited everyone if they possibly could, but they couldn't, unfortunately. But that research that they are doing in Southmead Hospital could one day find us a cure. And Anna Long, the scientist we heard from there, was partly funded by both Diabetes UK and JDRF. So two amazing charities, hopefully finding us a cure one day. But I think we have just about got to the end of today's episode. So thank you so much for listening along. If you've got anything to say about any of the topics that we've discussed on today's show, then please get in touch with us. We'd love to hear your thoughts. You can either get in touch on Facebook. We are at All For One Online. On Twitter, we are at All For One Tweet. On Instagram, we are at All For One Insta. Or you can get in touch on the email, just like Sally did, and she ended up on the podcast, by sending an email to contactall41@gmail.com. Just a reminder, that's the number 4 and the letters O-N-E. And if you still can't work it out, then it's all in the show notes or the show description. So whatever you're listening to this podcast on, just swipe up or click across and then you'll be able to see all the information. If you wanted to get in touch with me directly, please do give me a follow on social media. I'm at Jamie Lowe TV everywhere. There's also tons of diabetes related videos, including some more with Jess Fellows on my YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/Jamie Lowe TV. I hope everyone has a fantastic World Diabetes Day and an incredible Diabetes Awareness Month. I want to say thank you to Sally, to Dan, to Noni, to Jess, to David, and to you for listening to this podcast. We'll see you in the next one. Goodbye.